Today's program features our former co-host, Luann Crane. Today on Family Talk.
Welcome, everyone, to Dr. James Dobson's Family Talk. I'm Roger Marsh, and here on this Friday edition of the broadcast, you're going to hear a very familiar guest join Dr. Dobson in studio, comedian and author Ken Davis. Ken is also president of Dynamic Communications International, which teaches and trains ministry leaders and business professionals in the practice of public speaking. Now, some time ago, Ken sat down with Dr. Dobson to talk about the strained relationship he had with his emotionally distant father and revealed how he has motivated himself through the dark times of life. There's a lot to cover, so let's hear Dr. Dobson's honest and frank conversation with Ken Davis right now on this edition of Family Talk.
One of my favorite people is the man that is here today, Ken Davis, who I think has an intuitive understanding of this experience called humanity, what it means to live as he has, and to hear him talk about what he's learned and what he's seen and the sorrows and the joys and the experience of being with his family and speaking to people all around the world. There's just a lot that he has to teach us. But if you don't mind, there are two matters that I would like to get you to talk about. The first is your relationship with your father. It was different. It was the kind of relationship that many older men had with their fathers who were involved in World War II. Mm-hmm. Now, wasn't your dad
my
in world, the war?
My dad was a survivor of the Bataan Death March.
All right. Oh, yeah. Okay. And that shaped and had an influence on the way he related to you.
Yes.
Talk about that man, who he was, and how you felt about him.
My sister has just, by the way, returned and retraced all of his steps. But it's an absolutely amazing thing that he even survived. And his survival depended on him being tough. And perhaps as a result of that, it was hard for my dad to say, I love you. I think it was true of many people of that generation. I love you was said by putting a roof over the head and by putting food on the table. Yeah. And I don't have to say it. I remember somebody in a counseling session, a man said to the counselor, I told my wife I loved her when I married her. And if I change my mind, I'll let her know.
Not good.
To explain what the Bataan Death March was. And maybe you'll do that.
Just very briefly. A group of Americans were put on this peninsula in the Philippines and told to defend it. And they were given no reinforcements.
They were abandoned by
they were
government.
Abandoned. Yeah. And they held and held and held and held that piece of land for longer than would be humanly possible, but finally were overwhelmed by the Japanese forces. And there was I believe it was 60-some mile march that they had to go on. They were already starved to death. Many of them died on the way. I don't have the statistics all in my mind, but then they were taken to these horrible prison camps where they were kept. My father was there for 3.5 years, weighed 80-some pounds when he was liberated.
If anyone collapsed on the march, they were bayoneted
shot. Yep, absolutely. Yeah. And
cruelty.
It was cruelty, unbelievable cruelty. Yeah. And one of the reasons is that the Japanese held no respect for anyone who would surrender. Yeah. But my dad came out of that experience, and I want to make sure your listeners understand, my dad loved me with a passion. But there was a block that kept him from saying those words. Mm-hmm. You know, and I would say to my dad, I love you. And he'd say, well, I love you too with God's love. And that actually got to a point where it would make me angry. You'll understand. I would say, I want your love. I want to hear that you love me. He loved the word agape. He said, well, I love you with agape love. And I just wanted to hear the words. And so I have proclaimed since I can remember beginning speaking the importance of those three words in the life of a person. I had just received an award for one of the books that I had written. And I remember the award was in, above me in the airplane. And I sat in that seat and I said, I wish my dad could be here. I so want him to be proud of me. I would love to have him look at this, read it, and say, I'm proud of you and I love you. I love you so much. So I wrote my dad a letter on that airplane. I have inherited some of that. I'm not a good writer. I take some things for relationships in for granted. But anyway, I wrote this letter, and at the end of the letter, I say, all my life, one of my major goals in life was to make you proud. And I wrote, I want you to know today, I love you.
Was that letter written while your dad was still alive?
Oh, yes. Yeah. This is, my dad has lived for many years after this particular letter was written. Mm-hmm. But it was at the beginning of my success. Yeah. It would have been around the first time that you and I met. Mm-hmm. Dr. Dobson. So I wrote that letter to my father, and then I waited by the phone. You know what I mean. I waited for him to call and say, I got your letter. I love you. I want you to know I love you. And the call didn't come. And letters were exchanged back and forth between our families, but the call didn't come. There was a bitterness that kind of built up inside me. How hard is it to say, I love you? And eventually we took our family and went down to visit my father and mother. And that thing was in my head, you know. And so we walked into the house, and my dad was very demonstrative. I mean, he would come and hug me, and it was that kind of manly hug. You know, it hurt. When my dad hugged you, it hurt. Then he disappeared into the garage where he could fix anything, mm-hmm. and he was a tinkerer, and he built things, and he had a lathe out there. He disappeared into the garage. I could feel that bitterness inside. There was a great opportunity to say, I love you, and he didn't say it. Well, my mother motioned to me, that kind of motion that goes, come here, come here. And I said, what is it? She said, I want to show you something. She took me into my dad's room. And sitting against the wall was a table, and on the table were some candles and a lamp. And the entire wall, this was at the base of their bed in their bedroom, was covered with newspaper clippings of places I had been and articles that had been written. And, you know, because Diane would send these home to my family. That was wonderful. And then I saw a picture. There was a handmade frame. He had framed the letter that I had sent. And I collapsed. People who have heard other times I've been on the radio with you know that I collapse on a regular basis. But I collapsed. I sat on the edge of the bed and I wept because the wall screamed to me what my father could not say. Mm. I love you. It screamed it. And so that was a wonderful moment for me because it released me. I realized my dad does love me. He may not know exactly how to say it and he may not say it the way I want to say it. But this man is intensely proud of what has happened with my life, and he loves me very much.
I will bet that his father never said it to him.
Oh, I guarantee it. Yeah. I can guarantee it. Yeah. His father was an evangelist, a traveling Nazarene minister, mm-hmm. but it was tough. He was just not cruel. Those words don't even figure in. Not abusive, just we're in tough times, we live tough. Not a lot of smiling, not a lot of joking. We just walk through life one step at a time.
We did programs on D-Day, mm-hmm. You know, June the 6th, 1944, mm-hmm. and what happened there and thousands of men dying. This is when the Allies invaded Fortress Europa on the coast of France. And the men who survived that horrible experience had to fight all the way to Germany. Mm-hmm. And the majority of them didn't make it. Mm-hmm. Those who were in that generation at that time, many of them died. And they went through horrendous things. And they came home from the war and had children, became fathers. And those children were the ones in the late 60s that grew up to hate their parents. You remember that?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
They hated everything they stood for. They hated their country, their God, their work ethic. They hated it all and hated their mothers too. And I think one of the reasons is because the men who had gone through that horrendous experience could not express love and acceptance or even explain what they had been through.
And I believe with all my heart, I mean, you just watch these documentaries. They wanted to. Oh, they wanted to. Yeah. But something about what had happened to them kept them from being able to do that. Some of them broke through that, and those are marvelous stories too.
Did you connect with your dad before he died?
Not in that way. The connection happened because I recognized that
you accepted him the way he was.
Yes. That's what made the connection, is just going, my dad loves me, and I will not get this. But I want to say to the dads that are out there listening now, there are few things that you can do that are more powerful than to remind your children verbally, I love you, to say the words, I love you. There are few things a husband can do for a wife that is more powerful than the words, I love you, on a regular basis. It's so important. I was speaking at Promise Keepers one time, and I encouraged the men to stand up, because they had their sons there at this, I don't remember, 55,000, some huge number at Soldier Field. I said, I want you to stand up. I want you to embrace your son, and I want you to say, I love you. I was looking at a monitor, and the camera was focused on a man and his son, maybe 17 years old, standing uncomfortably, stiffly, looking at one another, but unable to embrace each other and say, I love you. And I remember stepping to the microphone and saying, men, if we are incapable of expressing love to one another, we have no message for the world. Yeah. We might as well walk out the exits right now. So I want you to say I love you.
And a wonderful thing that needs to be communicated with the younger generation is that circumstances in life have made your dad different from you. But you accept him just as he is, and you'll find that all the ingredients you want are probably there. Mm-hmm. He just can't get them out, and it's okay.
Yep.
Allow it to be what it is.
I have looked back at my parents and realized they did everything they could with what they had. And now I'm a parent. And my children are in therapy talking about me. And they have come to realize I did everything I could. So as I tried to raise my children, and this will be, if I ever write another book, which I'm not going to write another book on parenting, but I'm going to give you some things to put in your next one. As I was with my children, it was always about, I would take them with me thinking, this is great. What a great dad I am. But I would take them with me. So I would take them hunting, going, shh, shh, shh. And they're going, look at the flower. Look at the butterfly. Oh, there's a squirrel. Shh, 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 shh. Never realizing at the time, until they helped me see it later, that they desired for me to be present with them in their world. Now that I know, now I'm with my grandchildren, and we're picking up snails and sniffing them and...
Every dad will make one of those mistakes. I mean, you can correct the ones of the previous generation, and then you make
a new one.
Another whole battery of mistakes of your own.
Well, so, Dad, here's my word to you. Stop to sniff the snails. It's unbelievable.
Snails?
If you've got grandsons, you're sniffing snails.
We're going to go to the second thing I wanted to talk to you about. You have lost 50 pounds.
Yes.
How did you do it?
I saw a picture of myself taken from behind at the beach. I weighed 237 or 240 pounds, something like that. I was holding the hand of a little girl who, had she been struggling in the surf, I couldn't have saved her. I was out of shape. I just coasted. I had become an undisciplined, unmotivated person. My faith was comfortable. I had a career that was comfortable. But I'm going to tell you, so I want to say this. A comfortable faith is no faith at all. I had stopped risking. I had stopped trusting. I just wanted to hang on to what I had. And I saw that picture, and the comedian in me knew that there were people on the beach going, move, we want to see the ocean. I didn't dare lay down because the environmentalist would have poured water on me and pushed me back in. But I was horrified. And another one of those awakening moments where God drives a stake in the ground and says, whoa, take a look at this. So I didn't know how to get started. I didn't know how to discipline myself. So I signed up for a triathlon. No, not the I saw the look on your face. Not the Ironman. Okay. This is more like a styrofoam person triathlon, where you run to the bathroom, fill up the tub, pull the plug, fight the current, that kind of thing. It's a smaller, shorter triathlon, okay? But what it did was put a stake out there, and it gave me something to work toward.
A heart attack for one thing.
Oh, no, no, no. Well, my doctor said it was okay, and so I began to do it. I started biking. I called my wife so many times, come and pick me up. Uh-huh. We live in Tennessee. It's worse than Colorado for hills.
So a triathlon is biking, swimming,
biking,
running.
Swimming, and running. Mm-hmm. And this one was, I don't do details real well. It's 200 meters. 12-mile bike and then a 2-mile run. Hmm. But I couldn't go a mile. And then I started biking and biking, and I took second in that triathlon.
Oh.
In my age group. There were only two old guys in my age group, so second. No, the truth is this. I beat more than half of the people who entered the triathlon. But for people listening out there, this is part of what God is teaching me, and oh, I wish I'd have learned it earlier. This race God has called us to does not have a winner's circle. Hmm. It only has a finish line.
Yeah.
Paul said, I press toward the mark of the high calling of Christ. He talks about the fact that he wants to take hold of that for which Christ took hold of him. This idea of knowing the power of the resurrection in your life. He wasn't talking about just being raised from the dead. He said to the people he was writing to, I haven't yet achieved it. Well, they knew that. They knew he was still alive. He's talking about knowing Christ's power in your life. And for me, that started with physical. Now, I have to tell you a story. Mm-hmm. Finally, I made it up a 2.5-mile hill by our home. 2.5 miles. I had called my wife several times, and then I determined I wasn't even taking a cell phone anymore because if I couldn't pedal up it, I was going to walk the rest of the way. Finally, I could make it up this hill. And on this day, I was at the end of maybe 17 or 18-mile run and still making up the hill. And I'm almost to the top, but I'm spent. That wonderful spent where you're sweating and you know you're alive. There's pain, but that's what part of life is. And I hear, kind of sounded like one of those life support machines. I look behind me. There was a fossil of a man on a bike behind me, and he was gaining on me. Well, you know, God gave me an intensely competitive spirit and nothing to back it up. So I cannot let this old man beat me. So I stood up in the pedals and I started to pedal until I thought I was going to be physically sick. And he pulled up alongside of me and he looked over and he smiled. And I have to confess, I just wanted to clothesline him. I just wanted to stick my arm out and knock him off his bike. He kept right on going. And I thought, I'm getting off this bike. An old man has just passed me. Then I saw his head and his shoulders, and I thought, maybe I can catch him. But he was slowing down, came up beside me. And what I'm going to tell you is the truth. To the best of my remembrance, every word. He said, I'm sorry for interrupting you, but I want to encourage you, don't stop doing this. He said, I do this to live. Those are very encouraging, inspirational words. I didn't feel inspiration at the time because I'm almost throwing up and he's carrying on a conversation. He said then, don't misunderstand me. I don't do this to stay alive. I do this to live. He said, today is the anniversary of my stroke. Mm. I have regained all my speech. Mm. I'm celebrating. He said, I still do not have full control of my left arm or my left leg, but I'm alive. And then he took off. I had just been defeated by a disabled dinosaur, and I'm feeling a little down. And he goes over the top of the hill, and he turned back to me and yelled, live! That's all he said. And part of me thinks that he might be an angel, except that he was slobbering, and I know that can't be true.
Did you ever see him again?
Never saw him again. But all through life, Doctor, I'm telling you, God gives these little gems, this teacher that supported me as a child, the moment when the picture was taken on the beach, you know, a difficult time in marriage where God shows up and saves your marriage, and an ancient man on a bicycle encouraging you to live. And when I ran across that quote, the glory of God is man fully alive. And I'm telling you, God has laid his hand on me as clearly as I've ever felt and said, this is going to be the message of the rest of your life, to help people from all stages of distance from the cross of Christ to learn what it means to know Christ and the power of his resurrection.
You look wonderful.
Again, I feel great.
I mean, 50 pounds will do a whole lot.
Oh, yeah.
And you are, as you said earlier, enjoying every single day.
50 pounds in hair dye.
Oh, hello. I'll take it any color I can get it. I don't care. Well, I can't believe how fast these programs go. But it's always so good to have you here. Thanks for coming back and being with us.
Anytime. And,
we'll do it again.
Good.
And I've already told you, you have an open invitation whenever you can come.
Okay.
And it's just a hop, skip, and jump from
Nashville, Tennessee,
to Colorado Springs. Yeah.
We spend a lot of time in this area of the country. So, you know, in the summertime, Nashville becomes a Jurassic Park of the worst insects you've ever seen in your life. And here's Colorado with almost nothing.
No
so
bugs.
We kind of hang out here in the summertime.
Thanks again for being here to tell the story of your dad and the story of your health. They fit together somehow. I don't know how. By the way, the next time you come, don't come walking in here with tennis shoes and blue jeans. You know, I mean, that's an insult. I mean, here I am, a sophisticated guy, and you come in here. You don't have a tie. You don't have a coat. And I don't know.
Oh, it can get worse than this, Doctor. So.
Is that right? I tell you what, you come any way you want to. You just come back.
All right, I'll do it.
Okay.
You have been listening to Family Talk with an interview featuring Dr. James Dobson and best-selling author and comedian Ken Davis. You can learn more about Ken's organization, Dynamic Communications International, by visiting the broadcast page at drjamesdobson.org. You can also find out, once you're there, how to order any of Ken's best-selling books or where to listen to his popular podcast as well. Again, you'll find that information when you go to drjamesdobson.org and click onto today's broadcast page. Another way you can connect with us is by following our social media pages on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. On our accounts, you can listen to any of our recent broadcasts, read our informative blogs, or Dr. Dobson's latest newsletter. You can also share the encouraging verse or pictures that we've posted there. We promise that you will want to share our uplifting and Christ-centered content with your friends and family. So when you log into Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram, be sure to like and follow our pages by searching for Dr. James Dobson's Family Talk. As we close this week of broadcasts, did you know that Family Talk is a completely listener-supported ministry? We depend solely on your gracious donations to continue in the work that the Lord has called us to. Now, we understand times can be tough for you and your family, but if you are able to come alongside us financially at this time, please know how much we would greatly appreciate that support. You can go to drjamesdobson.org and find out how easy it is to give a gift online, or you can call us toll-free at 877-732-6825. That's where you can pledge a gift over the phone. Again, that's 877-732-6825. Please know how much we appreciate the constant assistance and the care that you share with this ministry, and we ask that you continue to lift our ministry up in your prayers as well. I'm Roger Marsh. Thanks so much for listening today and for all of this week, as a matter of fact. Join us again on Monday for more of Dr. James Dobson's Family Talk. Have a great weekend.
Family Talk is not associated with Focus on the Family.
Hi, this is Dr. Tim Clinton. Thanks for listening to Family Talk. You going through a tough time right now? Can't see your way out? You think there's no hope? We'd love to talk to you. I want you to know this. Dr. Dobson has been doing this for a long time, and he really cares about you so much that we'd love to talk to you right now. You can actually call us toll-free. Our number is 877-732-6825. You're going to be encouraged. You're going to be challenged. You're going to find new hope. You know why? Because God really does care about you. He loves you. And Dr. Dobson cares about you too. Call us now, 877-732-6825.